the farewell tour for Aaron Rodgers that we knew was coming and I guess sort of needed. Some of the schedule release need to knows, including Super Bowl favorites and the worst team in the league, and stay off the weed. Inside coverage starts right now. Just when we thought maybe we would get all the Aaron Rodgers drama out of the way, we finally maybe got there. I don't know. I feel like every offseason we spend the entire offseason saying, will Aaron Rodgers come back? He saved us from that conversation in the future as we now find out that this is going to be his last season. So as we break it all down, C-Rob, Ben Fox, Jason Fitz hanging out with you on Inside Coverage. Charles, are we buying this? Just the very beginning of this, the fact that we've already been told it's the last season, is Charles Robinson buying that?
You know, I'm sure there's the inclination of some people to say, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. And that's totally understandable, right? I mean, we've already drawn the Brett Favre comparisons with the end of Aaron Rodgers' career. I listened to and watched the meeting he had with media today. And, you know, he seems pretty resolute in it. It seems like something that he's thought about a long time. And for him to also allow that, he felt like he was walking away once Mike Tomlin departed the Steelers last year, and it wasn't until Mike McCarthy was hired by Pittsburgh that it started to stimulate his thought of coming back. I'd say I buy it at this point because it's clearly become so difficult for him to make that decision and that commitment. And barring Pittsburgh just having an unbelievable season, Rodgers, you know, rolling out a really unexpected, let's say like Tom Brady-esque late 40s or mid 40s campaign, I just don't know where the motivation would lie for him now.
Ben, you're smiling. You buying it?
I was just laughing at the Tom Brady-esque because I don't think we saw that drop off as much, right? We did see a drop off certainly from Tom Brady, even though it's sacrilegious to say that as he approached 45. But Aaron Rodgers is just, what else is there to be done, right? We've had the same kind of storyline the last few seasons. The Steelers seemingly always have a win total. I think the last five or six seasons, it's between 7.5 and 9.5. They actually have gone over their win total the last six seasons. But they're basically always around there. They're going to be a wild card team. Last year, somehow they won the division. And we saw kind of that ceiling against a really elite team in the Texans defense. We saw what they looked like. So it's difficult to believe that they're going to be better this season with an older Aaron Rodgers and everything else. And not to mention, you know, offensive line issues, the defense is older, et cetera. And I think there's just that difference too, right? We're seeing it in the NBA a little bit with LeBron James to a certain extent. You aren't the same player where it's like, okay, now you're a free agent and all these teams who potentially have a quarterback opening want this player, right? Which for Aaron Rodgers, for most of his career, if he had reached free agency, would be the case. This is just kind of a different stage. And I think Frank hit on it as well in previous podcasts. Like, this is both an indictment on kind of the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers. They both didn't have any better options. And the fact that this was kind of the Steelers, they didn't really have a backup plan that they could go to. So they had no leverage against Aaron Rodgers, which is why even when back at the combine, Omar Khan was saying, we're not going to wait around. Well, that's exactly what happened. And here we are. And Aaron Rodgers showed up when he wanted to. And all will be forgotten, especially if they go 10-7 or competitive. But it just kind of has been the same thing with Rodgers. He's going to do things on his own timetable. He's going to run the offense kind of he wants to run, and it'll either be successful or won't. And for the most part, the last few seasons, it hasn't been that successful.
And Fitz, you know, one thing I would say about all the drama being put to bed, it really isn't because he announced it before the season begins. So now what happens, we're going to stare at him the entire season going, this is it. And every time he goes and plays on the road, this is like the goodbye, right? It's the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar final season with the Lakers where they're bringing out rocking chairs and whatever and sort of celebrating him knowing you know, whatever we thought about this guy, he is one of the greatest to ever, you know, play the position. And now he's done. And when he comes through, it'll be the last time we'll watch this guy play. And, you know, so I think especially once we get into the latter stages of the season, we get into December and January, that's going to be a storyline, especially if they're a team that potentially is in the playoff mix. And even if they aren't, there's going to be some focus on Rodgers and how this all wraps up. Don't forget, even when we didn't know it was the end of Drew Brees' career in New Orleans, even though we all kind of knew it, what did we do when he walked out of, you know, walked off the field with the Saints the last time? We watched him kind of look around, and the media will make a meal out of it regardless of whether they're a good team or not.
I'm just trying to figure out, like, guys, it's easy to see what failure could look like. We all know what failure could look like in this process, but what does success look like? Like when you're telling me that Mike Tomlin was fired for not being able to win in the playoffs and not really being able to win enough and just barely keeping them relevant. Now I have Mike McCarthy coming in with an old ass quarterback that suddenly is going to try and fix everything and make it great. Like that just doesn't feel like a like in my mind to the point, Ben, you just said, you know, they win 10 games. If this team wins 10 games is currently constructed, that's a massive success to me. Way more likely this is an 8-9 team, 9-8 team. And then I'm trying to figure out, see, Rob, what am I supposed to make of that? Like Aaron Rodgers comes back for a year and they're just okay while he's just okay and McCarthy's just okay. That just doesn't feel like the raging success we want for the last season of Aaron Rodgers.
Well, it's the unsolvable problem they've had really since Ben Roethlisberger declined, and that is finding a definitive answer at quarterback. That's, to me, again, if this is just another season at the watermark, if it's, look, even if it's 10 or 11 wins and you lose in the first round of the playoffs, again, it doesn't change anything. There's no seismic shift, I think, inside the franchise. That comes when you definitively address the future at quarterback. Maybe that ends up being Drew Aller, who obviously they just drafted in the third round. And, you know, Mike McCarthy is talking about basically the guy's got to unlearn everything he learned at Penn State. There's a great feeling for you, Penn State. And you know, he's basically rewiring Drew Aller from the inside out. And then obviously Ohio State's Will Howard, who they drafted in 2025, is another guy that they'll look at. But neither of those players really should get meaningful snaps this year other than the preseason. So it just puts them back into kind of the same posture they were in really every offseason since Ben Roethlisberger, which is how are we going to, in a resolute fashion, address the quarterback position in a way that's not 1 year, you know, 2 year, 3 years out. It's got to be a 10-year answer, and they don't have a 10-year answer right now. So that's what, to me, if you're that front office, that's what you are working on beyond just the wins and losses this season. You need to find a 10-year answer at quarterback.
And also, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? This isn't, no offense, the Tennessee Titans, right? Or somebody else. The Pittsburgh Steelers, their job is to win championships, win Super Bowls. And so I think ultimately that's what you have to ask as a franchise. Even through all this past, what is the ceiling on this team, right? Are you closer to winning a Super Bowl right now than you were 3 days ago or certainly a couple months ago? The answer is no. And ultimately, if you're saying, hey, there's one thing we know for certain, Aaron Rodgers is not the long-term quarterback of the future for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so therefore, why are you starting him for all these games? Sure, you're going to have a better record this season, which again, you could argue is worse for next year's draft when you're going to need a quarterback. But even if that isn't the case, you're not going to get Will Howard on the field, Drew Aller on the field. Drew Aller probably shouldn't see the field this year anyway, but Will Howard potentially. You're not seeing what potentially could be the future on your roster anyway. And you've already seen last year, I think what one could say is the optimal outcome for this team, which was winning the division, which was unexpected, making the playoffs and getting absolutely routed by the Houston Texans. Like that to me is about as good as the Steelers are going to do. Look, we could all be shocked. Like I thought they were going to underperform last year. They proved me wrong. They could get out to a hot start. They are favored in 5 of their first 8 games. But then out of the bye, it is rough sledding. They got at Cincy, at Eagles, Denver, Houston, at Jacksonville, Baltimore. So very difficult schedule. And just overall kind of for the odds, they are plus 180 to make the postseason. That is the 11th best of all teams in the AFC. So oddsmakers not expecting them to make the playoffs. There's a lot of teams kind of ahead of them. And even the Bengals, right? You assume Joe Burrow's healthy. Like, it's, they're pretty clearly the third best team in that division. And so it's going to be an uphill battle. I just think that's also something with when you're preparing for the future as the Steelers. They haven't hit that hard reset. They didn't want to do it this season. That's fine. But there are going to be future ramifications for not doing that.
I mean, Ben, you do a story every offseason. I don't know if you remember off the top of your head what last season's number was, but essentially the wins above replacement each quarterback provides for each team. And it was about a year ago that I said I didn't think there was that big of a difference in war between Aaron Rodgers and Mason Rudolph for these Steelers. The way they're built, they're just sort of going to be who they're going to be. And that feels like I'm being wildly disrespectful to Aaron Rodgers, being a little disrespectful to Aaron Rodgers, but also a little just of y'all who you are. I know you haven't even dug in this year, but Ben, you can't tell me that this year oddsmakers are going to see a drastic difference between these Steelers, between whoever starts and Aaron Rodgers, which then only makes it even more like, if you're not going to have a much more ceiling on it, I'd rather take the floor. I'd rather take the chance that I suck drastically and then maybe get a quarterback next year than just keep treading water.
Yeah, I want to say it was around a field goal, somewhere like that, which again, for Aaron Rodgers is very low, right, over the backup. And just by comparison, I want to say the first year we did it, and look, when you have the comparison right, it's also to the backup. I believe DeShone Kizer was the backup in Green Bay when he was there. I want to say it was 9 points between him and Kizer, right? So that's like the max you're ever going to have at the quarterback position. But it just shows that, yes, certainly in his prime, Aaron Rodgers versus Mason Rudolph, that's going to be 6-7 points, you know, if not more. So there just isn't as big a difference. And I think we'll probably see that. I actually am just about to send that sheet out to odds makers. So that'll be coming in a couple months. But yeah, I would not be surprised if it's the lowest difference of Aaron Rodgers' career in the 6-7 years I've done it between him and the backup quarterback in terms of his value to the spread, which you shouldn't expect. The guy's 42, 43? I mean,
I get it, Ben, but like, see, Rob, I guess the thing that I would say is, to me, change for the sake of change is not always great change, but that's what they did at the head coaching position. So if you're going to make change for the sake of change in the head coaching position, but then bring the same quarterback back, like, the hell are they actually, like, what does ownership in Pittsburgh actually think is going to happen this year?
Okay, well, look at the cap table, right? When we're just talking about the age right now. And a number of these players, by the way, are going to be 30. Some of them are going to turn 30 during the course of the season or prior to the season. TJ Watts, 32 right now. DK Metcalf's 29. Alex Highsmith's 29. Jalen Ramsey's 32. That's your top four paid players on your cap table right now, not counting Aaron Rodgers' deal that just came in. Aaron Rodgers' deal actually slots sixth. So he's 43. Cameron Hayward's 37. Michael Pittman Jr., 29. This is right now. Deshaun Elliott, 29. Jamel Dean, 30. Like, this team, it's not just for the sake of, well, if we're going to make wholesale change, we do it with the coach, we do it with the quarterback. Well, if you do it with the quarterback, you're doing it with everybody. That's my stance right now with the Steelers, is this is the beginning of the end. You look at the cap table, you look at the age of the players that comprise the top 10 to 12 players on their cap table. They're all either at the very tail end of their prime or they're entering the very tail end of their prime as NFL players. So this is the start to the rebuild. It's the last time you take the old car out for a spin, and everybody's got the memories and everybody, oh, it was, you know, this or that, and it saw better days. But this is it. When you pull it back in after this, you're going out and you're getting something new. And even though ownership has said they don't do rebuilds, you better wake up, because you're going to do a rebuild this time around.
You're right. It's going to be a very long season full of Aaron Rodgers stories, no matter what happens. All right, let's get to one of the other big stories right now in the NFL, and that's Rashee Rice, the Chiefs wide receiver, ordered to serve his 30 days in jail after testing positive for marijuana in violation of the terms of his probation. Now, this all ties back to a role in a crash that left multiple people injured on a Dallas highway 2 years ago. As part of that, from my understanding, he was sentenced to 30 days in jail that could be served at any point during this probation period that he was on. So he could have served that at any point, but he also had rules he had to follow. He broke one of those rules that was specifically that laid out to him by the judge, by the court system, failed the weed test, and as a result, immediately has to serve his 30 days, which means he's going to miss OTAs. And also of note, he just had surgery cleaning up his knee. He's going to have to rehab that. See, Rob, the Chiefs have to be angry right now, don't they?
Well, there's a reason why he's in the fourth year of his four-year deal and he hasn't gotten an extension. Like, remember, there was a time when we thought Rashee Rice, he was the perfect fit for Patrick Mahomes, his skill set. This was going to be once Tyreek Hill went out the door and they began to transition away from Travis Kelce. This was going to be their new number one building block wide receiver. And yet he doesn't have an extension right now. And this is why. Go and look at his numbers. Over 4 years, realistically, he's barely got 1,700 yards receiving in the first 3 or 4 years of his career. I mean, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba had over 1,700 yards receiving last year. That's how you end up becoming your team's cornerstone wideout, especially when you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. And that has never happened with Rice. It's always something, right? He's that player with the Chiefs. It's always something, whether it's injury, whether it's this kind of suspension. Obviously, there were red flags, you know, with character coming in. The crash, as you said, in Dallas that created what's going on right now with this suspension. The fact that he would even fail, frankly, a test for THC at this point, when you know you're on probation, you know you're going to be getting tested, and then it happens anyway, I think has to be the highest point of frustration for the Chiefs. And by the way, when you look around him, from a skill position standpoint, we're still waiting. You know, like, is Xavier Worthy going to turn into a reliable, even number two receiver in that set of receivers? You know, Tyquan Thornton, they just drafted Cyrus Allen. Jalen Royals, another guy that they drafted last year in 2025. There's just, you're waiting. Right. You're waiting for someone to surface. And I think all this will do is it's going to end up fueling the thought process that maybe Tyreek Hill, who's still sitting out there as a free agent, could have one last hurrah with the Kansas City Chiefs, one last flourish in 2026, and give Patrick Mahomes something else that he's familiar with, that he knows he's had success with in the past. Even if Hill's lost, you know, at least maybe half a step from what he used to be, the familiarity might open that door again for him, I think, in Kansas City and what's going on with Rice right now.
Yeah, and to see Rob's point, like, I think Rashee Rice, on strictly on the football field, like, a good player, but is always the potential, right? And if we get him back on the field, we can do this. Some of that also is because of the marginal improvement and how much better Rashee Rice is than all the other options, right? And I think that also speaks to the fact of Kansas City, once they had that trade for Tyreek Hill, they never really replaced him, right? And obviously Travis Kelce, not the same player. He's coming back. They don't have kind of the person waiting in the wings for him either. So you're relying on that Xavier Worthy, Tyquan Thornton, and because of also the fact that then on defense, right, they lost essentially their entire cornerback room. They used that top 10 pick and traded up for Mansoor Delaney. They also had Peter Woods later in the first. They also had R. Mason Thomas. So all of a sudden, the defensive end. So all of a sudden, your first three picks in the draft are also on defense. And so you haven't really restocked that offensive roster, not to mention Patrick Mahomes is coming off of that severe knee injury. We're not really sure. He says he's going to be back week one. We're not sure if he's going to be back. I think there's just a lot of offensive questions there, certainly for Kansas City. And because they missed on some of those other draft picks, Sky Moore, right, and some others, so they just haven't hit as well on the offensive side as they have on the defensive side. They had to restock the defense. There's no question about that. They had no cornerbacks. But the cost of that is now you look on offense, you're relying on Rashee Rice to be that number one receiver. And all of a sudden, if he's not that number one receiver or is even on the field, it's just a big impact. So we talk about kind of force multipliers, right? Now, all of a sudden, Rashee Rice isn't drawing coverage. He's not there. Now coverage is on Travis Kelce or on somebody else. And obviously they, you know, they added some in the run game too with Kenneth Walker. But there's just a lot of questions, I think, on offense and on defense with young players for the Chiefs.
I can't say this loud enough, guys. Like, if I run the Kansas City Chiefs, I can't trust Rashee Rice at all, ever. Because to me, this is so simple. And that said, I am the one person on this show and the person at Yahoo Sports that has never hidden the fact that I consume weed all the time. I'm a daily user of marijuana, right? Like, so I understand this. The thing that I implore everybody is, like, rules are rules. Whether you think it makes sense, whether you think it's dumb, whether you think it doesn't make any sense because of the legality of it in different places, none of that matters. When you are in this situation, when you are on probation, everybody in your team, your agent, your lawyer, your family, you, everybody gets a whole docket. They get a whole sheet that tells you every single rule you have to live by. And if you want to remain out of jail, you have to, I don't know, dot, 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 follow the damn rules. The fact that you know the rules you're up against, the fact that, to see Rob's point, you're in the fourth year trying to prove to the world you should get a massive fifth year on your contract. You're trying to prove to everybody you should be just bank. You are payday. You've got all this on the line, and you're still out there smoking weed. Like, this is one of the dumbest things that I can imagine, because you did it right after a knee injury. Now you're going to have to rehab your knee in county jail. Like, that is not the way you want to improve your fitness as you go through a rehab process. The number of stupid mistakes made in this process. And again, that's coming from somebody that does live somewhere where it's legal. That's coming from somebody that does have a medical card. That is coming from somebody that uses marijuana regularly. Dude, if you can't stop when a judge has told you you have to stop, you got a problem. And if everybody in your circle can't get you to stop when you know you should stop, you got a problem. And this problem is bigger than anything. And I'm telling you, if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, there is not an ounce of trust that I give Rashee Rice, because Rashee Rice has lost that. His actions have cost him any trust with the organization. And now they're in a situation that may be the most shocking. I know we got to move on. But see, Rob, the one thing that to me shocks me is that the Chiefs didn't address any of this. Like, they haven't looked at it and said, hey, how are we going to make sure that we're not caught off guard by Rashee Rice's actions? They didn't go out and draft it. They didn't go out and find it. I'm stunned that the Chiefs have let themselves get in this situation.
Well, I think, you know, part of that has to do with what Ben, you know, already addressed, is that they've tried to focus at least some of this build right now on getting the defense younger and back in line. And we can't really even gloss over, you mentioned it, the knee cleanup, right? They go in there and they clean up debris out of the knee that was creating swelling since the last surgery. That alone, I mean, it's at least slightly concerning, the fact that you have to do a debris cleanup and there was swelling in the same knee that he previously had, surgery to repair a torn ligament. It's all troubling, right? And it certainly puts the Chiefs into a situation, I think, again, where they may have to reach out there to Tyreek Hill and say, look, even if it's just on a one-year deal, we need to add an element that gets us through the 2026 season, particularly, you know, someone with familiarity, doesn't have to come in, learn any kind of a playbook, knows his teammates. Is he a little bit of a gamble too? Yeah, he is. Guess what? But he's also a gamble you've known. You've dealt with that, you know, before in the past. And perhaps you get a bump on the field from him in terms of what he's still able to contribute, with him once again being able to play with Patrick Mahomes and, you know, get that sense of, hey, this was my greatness. This was my peak. This was when I was a first team all pro caliber player for a number of seasons. Maybe you get an extra step out of him. But the 2027 draft, I mean, I guess the one upside is, even if they're picking late in the 2027 draft, it's very, very deep. It's very, very rich with offensive players. And it's been a while since we've seen a bad wide receiver class come through the NFL. It seems like every year it's a good wide receiver class. Well, 2027 is going to be no different. There's going to be a lot of good wide receivers in that draft class, and it should go pretty deep.
It's also just interesting how history repeats itself, right? Is this not the New England Patriots with Tom Brady, where all of a sudden, who is he throwing to? Rashee Caldwell and this, and like, can we get the man some offensive weapons and help? I understand there's the cap. They have to pay Mahomes a lot, everything else. But it's just interesting how it kind of seems like we're in the same thing. 31 other teams haven't signed Tyreek Hill yet either, right, for a reason. So yeah, if that's your best option as a backup, that's not a great second option.
I'm just imagining the moment that we're all in a boardroom and we're running the Kansas City Chiefs together. Congratulations to us. And they come in and they say, great, great news, guys. We figured it out. We have a backup plan for how we're going to solve the Rashee Rice situation. And we're sitting there. Yes, give it to me. What do you got? Tyreek Hill. It's just a whole conference room.
3.0. Oh,
yeah.
There we go. All right. But in the meantime, we got plenty more to break down and plenty of time to keep breaking the Chiefs down. But coming up next, an NFL legend, an NFL icon, Emmitt Smith, joins the show. He had the chance to talk to Andrew Siciliano. You can check it out next.
This is a Hall of Fame guest, quite literally, here on Inside Coverage on Yahoo. He has a gold jacket. He's here on behalf of Bud Light. He's just a guy trying to enjoy his summer. Emmitt Smith, how the heck are you? Good to see you.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Before we get to the football and the Bud Light and all that, can I ask you about being a football dad? Is that all right?
Yeah. What you want to know about being a football guy?
So, no, football dad.
Oh, dad.
Dad.
Okay.
Okay. So the Cowboys don't play the Chiefs this year, but EJ, your son is with the Chiefs now.
Yeah.
Like, what would that be like if the Cowboys played the Chiefs?
It would be awesome. It would be awesome. Especially if my son is back there running the rock. That would be amazing. I mean, really would be amazing. I am so proud of EJ. And in terms of his maturity, his fight, his drive to try to be the very best that he can possibly be, his work ethic is amazing. And I just have a genuine good kid, good guy, respectful and everything else. He's a student of the game as well. So he's looking to learn and grow, and he's not afraid of hard work. And so, to see him having the opportunity to play with the Chiefs and to earn a right to be on that team, it's nerve-wracking as a father, because you know when the Grim Reaper come around, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. So you could put in all that work and training and everything else, but to see young men's have a chance to fulfill their dream, that is a wonderful thing to see as a father. Yeah, but you also know how difficult it is to make it.
Have you thought about that possibility? Like, would you be the dad with the half Chiefs, half Cowboys jacket? Would you be that guy?
No, I would not be that guy. I would be the guy that represents my son, no matter where he's at. And I've done that even in college, even at A&M. When A&M played the Gators, I was decked out in A&M gear. Now, I love my Gators, but I love my son a lot more.
That's the right answer. But yeah, without a doubt. And plus, those jackets are like they're funny looking. Like they just
One thing,
it's like
about
you wear them to be on TV. It's like they're always gonna be like you're Emmitt Smith. They'll find you in the sand regardless. But I feel like when people wear them, it's like, hey, look at me. I'm wearing both sides.
Well, yeah. I mean, when A&M played the Gators down in Gainesville a couple of years, EJ's first year with the Aggies. We did have jerseys half and half.
Okay.
I had them made up half and half because it was at the University of Florida. How can I not go back to the University of Florida and represent the University of Florida? Because I did the two bits and everything else right before the game. And then after that, I went and changed it to a full A&M stuff. And so, but even at College Station, I was decked out in nothing but A&M gear. Because we was a Cal field, and so I got to respect where I played at, but at the end of the day, it is all about my kid.
Sure, absolutely, and we're all rooting for EJ here as he starts his NFL journey with the Chiefs. Let's talk about your Cowboys. Let's do that. How would you feel if you were George Pickens right now? It's one thing to get a franchise tag; you're going to get well paid. I know no one really likes it, but at least it's a starting place for negotiation. But when Steven comes out and says, hey, we're not going to do a long-term deal right now, like play on the franchise tag, that's it. How would you feel?
I would feel slighted. I would feel like, okay, I need to go out here and earn and play and kick butt booty. So next year, if I got leverage, I can play that leverage to my advantage, not necessarily the Cowboys. I think with franchise tags, athletes lose leverage. And when you lose leverage, you're subject to what George has, and he has to understand that. But beyond that, it's about now having my mind right, having my attitude right, going out here working my butt off, and going out and having a great year to where you remove all doubt. And when you remove all doubt, you position yourself to be traded someplace or to be a free agent or even sign back with the Cowboys if you choose to.
You think he's going to have his mind right?
If he doesn't, he's only hurting himself, period. And the question he has to ask himself is, what kind of career do I want to have? I can have a career that says I'm a pout when I don't get my way, or he can step up and be the professional athlete that people expect him to become and the great wide receiver that people expect him to become. And he has to ask that of himself. What does he want for himself? Because don't think you can just turn it off and turn it on. Whatever habits that you create today are going to be habits that's going to be hard to break tomorrow, whether they're good habits or bad. So to me, it's beyond the game. It's about him as an individual player. How do you show up? And do you show up professionally and send a message to the entire league that I am that guy? I'm that guy that's going to show up and play my hardest regardless. And the money is cool. I didn't get what I wanted, but as long as I'm on the team, as long as I have an opportunity to prove my worth, I'm going to do it. And when the opportunity comes for me to have the leverage and for me to pull triggers, then I'm going to position myself for that.
All right, that's the offense. There's obviously issues on the defense. There were last year. That's why you kind of overhauled that side of the ball. That's why you bring in a new DC and Christian Parker, the former DB coach in Philadelphia. Emmett, you think the defense is going to be good enough? You confident?
You know, I think the defense is going to be competitive enough. I ain't say good enough. I say competitive enough, and that's enough to be good enough, to be honest with you. The reason why, because if you're competitive enough and you're flying around the ball, you're going to create opportunities. And I think last year the defense was not organized or structured from the front to the back. I think there were so many disconnections in terms of what the front was doing and how it was being communicated to the back that there was too much chaos. And one thing a defense does not need is chaos unless they're causing chaos. I think if you got a defense too busy thinking, they're slow. They're not as responsive as they need to be. And if you got guys that are not communicating, you have busted coverages, or you got wide receivers wide open on third and 25 and they're getting the first down, or you don't have guys competing on the football field. And I think that was a big problem for the Cowboys last year. And so hoping that Christian Parker brings in a lot more stability and open communication lines. I think Caleb Downs may have the opportunity to be that guy who has to learn how to play in the box, outside the box, communicate right, left, and set the secondary, as well as understanding how the communication line should happen from the mic back to the safety. All of that needs to take place, and I think he has to learn that. And if he doesn't already know that, but the way I see it, Andrew, is this: any improvements that we have on our defense is going to be a hell of a lot better than what we had last year. And if we're a hell of a lot better than what we were last year, that means we got an opportunity to win more games if the offense become more consistent.
I can hear the pain in your voice, by the way, just for like memories of last year. It's like, no, they don't have to be good. They just have to be like passable. Is kind of what you're saying, because last year was that bad.
It was just that bad. I mean, it really was that bad. I mean, I don't even know how the D coordinator got a job. It looked that bad. I mean, it was awful. Downright awful. And the communication lines was like hand signals where nobody on the team understood what they were. It was bad. It was like me trying to be D coordinator. And I know defense. I don't know nothing about calling no defense plays.
But it's not your thing. I got one more thing before we get to the work you're doing here with Bud Light and Peyton Manning and his acting chops, by the way. The Cowboys are going to Rio week 3 to play the Ravens. What would your Cowboys team do in Rio? How much would your Cowboys team have enjoyed that trip?
Me, I really say.
I saw
what you
the
want
smile.
Me to say.
I don't
what
know
you want
what
me to say. You saw the documentary. you saw the implications or the suggestions of some house. I mean, you think we went to Rio and not blessed Rio?
Hey, like sometimes on these international trips, they tell the team, you guys can't leave the hotel. Like in Mexico, when they play games in Mexico a bunch of years ago, they're going back this year. Hey, guys, don't leave the hotel. And I think In Sao Paulo was the same thing. I don't know that that would have worked with you guys.
You don't have to leave the hotel for things to happen.
You can bring the bar. All right. Yeah. Well, let's stop. Let's get to your acting.
Emmett. That's a wise decision. I mean, having Bud Light on me.
let's turn the page. All right. You're here on behalf of Bud Light. I saw the commercial. It's you and Peyton. It's great. I was telling our producer Madison before you jumped in here, like working with Peyton is a lot of fun because he's exceedingly prepared. Did he want to be like the actor, the director, the cinematographer, the lights, the makeup guy, kind of like all in one?
No. Here's what Peyton is a pro at what he does.
Yes.
And he want everyone else around him to be pros at what they do. Other words, if you're the cameraman, don't be messing up. Get the shot. If I shoot this one scene 10 times, you better have 5 good ones in there. That's what the expectations are. And I understand it. Like today, up here doing what we did today, all our job was to walk 20 yards and stop at a spot. I had no speaking lines. I didn't have to rehearse that. All you had to do is just tell me what you wanted me to do.
You nailed it.
I could have made what that happen. And so with Peyton and us as athletes, once we understand what we need to do, we go and prepare for it. If you got lines, you prepare for these lines. And you want to get in character, you get in character. And so with Peyton, I know I need to be prepared. I know he's going to be prepared. I get to bring my personality. He get to bring his personality. And we both just collaborate and have fun. And sometimes our ad-libs are better than what was written on the scripts.
You guys nail it. You both nail your parts.
We have fun at what we do. That's what we do. We have fun at what we do.
And that comes through.
And Bud Light want everyone else to have fun at what they do as well. That's why they're giving away $250,000 worth of the grilling essentials, including coolers and cash, bro. And the summer's right around the corner. So it's grill time. I don't know if you're a griller, but I am a griller. I know I will probably be cooking something for Memorial Day. I know I'll probably be doing something for 4th of July. I always do. And I don't have no problem doing it again this year because I love to do it for my family and friends, you know? And so that's what the summer is all about. That's what tailgating is all about. That's what football is all about. It's about collaboration and friendship and love for one sport or one beer.
You nailed that part as well. Emmett Smith in the new Bud Light campaign, Grill for America. Got Memorial Day coming up, the 250th birthday coming up on July 4th, and Emmett's commercial coming up as well to a TV or a phone near you. Emmett, we appreciate you doing this, man. Enjoy your summer. Best of luck to EJ.
All right, bro. Be good.
Welcome back to Inside Coverage. Plenty to break down on the schedule, as the schedule release always gives everybody the opportunity to really look at it. And of course, every fan base is convinced that the league hates their team. But as we continue to rip through the schedule, there are favorites and underdogs that really become interesting. We're going to take a look at some of them now. And Ben, I keep thinking about this. You were on Yahoo Sports Daily with us the other day. By the way, you should check that out wherever you consume Yahoo Sports, from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern. You were on Daily with us the other day, and you planted a seed unintentionally with me that now has me feeling some kind of way about the Bengals. The Bengals are favorites in 15 of their 17 games. And it's funny, because I don't hear a lot of people talking about, whoa, this is the year for the Bengals. But Ben, if they're a favorite in 15 out of 17 games, could it be the year of the Bengals?
Well, certainly Joe Burrow hopes so. And he's talking about that passing touchdown record and everything else. And look, they are a team that I think we know, right? They've gone up to Arrowhead. They've beaten Kansas City in the playoffs. They've beaten Buffalo in Buffalo. They're not scared of any team in the AFC. It's just a question of, have they improved enough on defense as well? And can Joe Burrow and those receivers stay healthy? It was fascinating when the schedule comes out, sportsbooks release odds, some sportsbooks for every single game, 272 games this season. And you can kind of go through, right, and see, okay, we thought this schedule is difficult. It's always good to look at the schedule basically via the season win totals for this year, right, as opposed to last year's strength of schedule, because so much changes from last year to this year. And so that's where you can really glean some insights. I was surprised to see the Bengals favored in 15 of those 17 games, but also it should be noted, five of them are just by 1.5 points. So they are one that could flip, right? And obviously, depending on if Joe Burrow's healthy or other players, but certainly that was one that stood out when you just see, I think the Bengals are 9.5 or 10.5 as a win total. That's one where you say, oh, wow, they're favored in all those games. And like we said on Yahoo Sports Daily Fits, it's always all underdogs or favorites are not created equal, right? So I think people see that. They're like, they're favored in 15 games. It's like, well, if they're 1.5 point favorite, they're, you know, maybe whatever that is, 55-60% to win the game. It's not like they're playing the Cardinals, where just about everyone's a double-digit favorite against the Cardinals this year. So that was definitely one that stood out. Just interesting that the Bengals favored in that many games. And look, with Joe Burrow, it's hard to say there's a better quarterback in the AFC, even with how good the AFC is at quarterback. At his best, he's just as good as anyone else.
It's funny. The first month of their season, and, you know, I just opened it and I'm looking at it again. And yeah, there's a lot of it's a bad schedule, a lot of terrible looking teams, that's for sure. But knowing how the first month of the NFL season is always kind of wonky, right? Teams are not fully figured out, you know, especially with the lack of exhibition games. It's not really franchises are not well oiled, right? When we start an NFL schedule. Tampa Bay, right, is their first game. Then they're on the road at Houston. They're on the road at Pittsburgh. And then they're at home against Jacksonville. That's not like a cream puff first four games, right? Like, it's especially given that it's the very beginning of the season and teams are still sorting things out. I'll be curious to see how that sets the table for the rest of the schedule for them. Now, you know, I would think with Burrow and everybody being healthy, you know, do I think that's a, you know, 4-0 start or at least a 3-1 start? Yeah. You know, let's see what Houston's defense looks like. If it's comparable to last season or better, you know, CJ Stroud. I mean, David Montgomery, I think, is going to add a lot in the Houston backfield. So I think maybe Houston on the road is maybe a much tougher draw than people are giving them credit for, even offensively, I think, with some of the improvements in the offseason. But it's feasible they come out of that, you know, four game stretch to start the season maybe not looking so great, especially if they don't come in where we think they're going to be, in a rhythm. And it's hard to get in a rhythm in the preseason nowadays, but the remainder of that schedule, yeah, is really, really bad. And when I look through it, you know, the one interesting team this year that I think Carolina is going to be better than people think. I really do. I think that defense is actually going to be an element that can carry the Panthers. So when you look later in the schedule and you see the three game stretch in December where it's Kansas City, Carolina, Indianapolis, I don't know what Indianapolis, and then it's Baltimore after that. I don't know what Indianapolis is going to look like this year if Daniel Jones is healthy, right? I mean, that was a different team when he was playing healthy football. And then again, the Baltimore Ravens, we never know what Ravens team we're going to get. It could be great Lamar. It could be, you know, 12-5 Baltimore Ravens. It could be 7-10 Baltimore Ravens. So even the last stretch in December before they finish up at Cleveland, or excuse me, hosting Cleveland in that flex game. It's an interesting first four, and then an interesting final four out of five.
The math ain't mathing for me in the AFC West for a second here. And I'm talking about the good teams, not my beloved Raiders that suck. The Chargers have 10.5 games. The Chiefs have 10.5 games. I look at the Chiefs, I'm like, okay, well, we don't really know when Mahomes is going to be back or what that's going to look like. We spent earlier in this episode talking about some of their offensive issues. The next time the Chargers are healthy for a season will be the first time the Chargers have been healthy for a season. And I'm not sure the Broncos aren't better than both of those teams right now. So I'm a little stunned to see 10.5. Ben, that feels rich for me for two teams in the AFC that might be the second best. Either of them might be the second best. And there are at least three teams in that division that are good. 10.5 is a beefy number for that.
Definitely beefy. And look, so much of this is schedule dependent and then kind of how those games line up, right? And so that AFC West, they have to face the NFC West, and that is not an easy division, right? And so a lot of how both of those divisions go is going to be how these teams end up playing against each other. And the Chiefs, they do. So they have a win total of 10.5. They're favored in 11 games, which sounds like a lot. But when you think of the Chiefs, and I look back at this, this is the fewest games they're projected going into a season to be favorites in Patrick Mahomes' career, which is pretty incredible that that number is 11. And that's the lowest amount. And they have an easy start, right? They have the Broncos, Colts, at Dolphins, Raiders. They're favorites in all those, 5.5-point favorites in at least three of those, right? And so we don't know if Patrick Mahomes' face is going, you know, week one. He's said that he has. Either way, that's a tough game against the Broncos. But later in the season, I think, is where, you know, this is going to be made for them. They have at Bills, at Rams, at Bengals, Patriots, Niners, at Chargers. That is just a brutal schedule. They're underdogs in four of those games. They're 2.5-point favorites in two of them. And last year, we just don't think of the Chiefs, right? As they're this team, they're usually favored. They usually cover. They were 4-10 as a favorite. So they just, the market kept thinking, hey, this is the same Chiefs team. They never really lived up to those expectations. And as we talked about with some of those roster construction issues, we're not really sure exactly how that defense will look. Are there enough offensive playmakers? Is Patrick Mahomes healthy, et cetera? To your point for the Chargers, same kind of thing. There's so many different ways to look at the schedule. One of them that Warren Sharp does a great job with is rest differential, which is basically, right, if a team is coming off a bye and the other team isn't, that's a 7-day advantage, right? You have time to prep for that specific team. You know you're playing them that. The Chargers have a negative 24-day differential, which is the worst, I think, in the past, let's say, 30 years. They play four different teams coming off that team's bye, right? So four different teams are able to prepare for the Chargers off that bye. They also have two games with three fewer days rest, right? So like, you know, Thursday, Sunday, that type of thing. They start off easy. Again, they face the Cardinals and then Fitz's Raiders. So they're double-digit favorites and then 8.5-point favorites. But then again, at Buffalo, at Seattle, Denver, at Chiefs, bye, at Rams, Texans, at Ravens. So brutal schedules for both of these. It just depends. Hey, you look in the NFC West as well. They also are facing the AFC West. It's basically, who do you think is better, right? Is it Broncos and those other AFC West teams in terms of the Chiefs and the Chargers? Or is it the Seahawks and the Rams and the Niners? Because they're going to be playing each other. And those, whoever wins those games is going to determine those win totals, right? If it goes over under 10.5. And those are some of the highest win totals of any NFL team that we have.
Yeah, that's seven games that you rattled off for the Chargers from week three to 10 is, I mean, that's a gauntlet. That's crazy. I mean, that's it. Now we're assuming these teams live up to what they think they can be, but even once you get past that week 10, you got the Jets. Okay, fine. Then you get New England. If New England, okay, I know, like, Super Bowl team with the easiest schedule in history, but young quarterback and Drake May, you would think they're still ascending. They're taking another step forward. Maybe AJ Brown's on that roster. We expect he will be. So it should be, for all intents and purposes, when we look at the Patriots right now, should be a good team on their schedule late. Tampa Bay, again, I don't disrespect Tampa Bay. I think if Baker Mayfield's healthy, I don't think he was healthy all last season. Obviously, the wide receivers were banged up in the skill positions. You know, they're at times it looked like they were just a tight end only offense through a brief stretch last year. So I think, you know, Tampa Bay is another team that I think is has the ability late to give them a tougher game. San Francisco, even if San Francisco's beat up, it's still a well-coached team. And then the two games, they host Kansas City in week 17, and then they're on the road in Denver in January, you know, a flex game to end the season. 10.5 just seems to me like that's a high win total, especially when, by the way, what are their offensive tackles going to, we always talk about all these players coming back from injury. Let's see what the offensive tackles look like. What are, you know, Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater, you're talking about two guys coming off of season ending injuries. Justin Herbert was beat up last year. There's a lot there to question about the Chargers. And guess what? You also lost your defensive coordinator, Jesse Minter, who is a pretty damn good coach.
So let's look at the other side of it real quick. Because the Cardinals are underdogs in literally every single game. They look to be poised to be the worst team in the league. I have a hard time figuring out what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. Anytime you're ripping the things down to the studs, I mean, come on, Marvin Harrison was supposed to be an absolute dynamic difference maker. We all know that. But you don't have a quarterback. Maybe next year you get a clear path to a quarterback. I hate any team going through that sort of a season, but Ben, it certainly feels like Vegas is telling us that the Cardinals could be suffering through what could end up being a historically bad season.
Yeah, the only team not to be favored in any game, even the Dolphins favored in one game. And a lot of the, you know, when you look at some of these lower teams, a lot of the, they're facing each other, right? So somebody generally is favored unless it closes as a pick 'em. And for the Cardinals, not only are they that underdog, 8 games as a double-digit underdog. I believe their average spread is plus 8.5. So these are large, large spreads that they have. And it kind of seems like with the way they have built the roster and built, I would say, being a generous term, is they got their running back, right? And now they know this next draft is where all the quarterbacks are. And so, yes, they took Carson Beck, and he will likely see some time because also their presumptive starting quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, is currently holding out for a contract. So it seems like they've said, hey, look at our division as well, right? They are in either the NFC North, you get AFC West, one of the top two, you know, or at worst, 3 toughest divisions in the league. It's very difficult to see them competing in that division for a title, let alone making the playoffs. So, hey, they're doing what probably the Steelers should do and say, just based on these odds, they're going to lose a lot of games. They're going to have a high draft pick, and they'll be able to get that quarterback in next year's draft, potentially, unless, hey, they just hit on something with Carson Beck, which is great if you get that in the 3rd round. Otherwise, it kind of seems like we know where the season potentially is going with the Cardinals. There is talent on the roster, right? You look at the offensive side. You have Trey McBride. You have Marvin Harrison. Like, now you have a running back that's really good in Jeremiah Love. There are pieces on the offensive line. It's not a roster where it's like, I have a hard time seeing how they're going to win a game. It's just when you have that level of quarterback play, it's difficult, especially when you even just look in their division, right, and compare them to other quarterbacks.
Yeah, not having Brissett right now, I mean, for him holding out for money, which I get, by the way, when Kirk Cousins is going to make, you know, $20 million dollars a season, and you're sitting there and you're looking at it, Jacoby Brissett's thinking, well, I'm not going to play for, you got to at least pay me 15, right? If you expect me to be your bridge starter over the course of the season, otherwise, go ahead and roll out, you know, back right now, and let's see what that looks like.
He's looking at those spreads. He's saying, I need to get paid more to be put out there as a punching bag.
Yeah, absolutely. But I, you know, if Love turns out to be Adrian Peterson, this will be a team that ends up surprising a couple of teams. I don't think that Jeremiah Love is Adrian Peterson. But when I look at the schedule, and I'd ask you this, Ben, where's their first win? Because realistically, I mean, these all look like, you know, the 49ers, with injuries, let's see what that team ends up looking like. The New York Giants under, obviously, John Harbaugh, which is that's week 4. There are some games where I'm like, all right, they do have these pieces on offense. As you said, Marvin Harrison Jr., Wilson, you know, Trey McBride, Love, if he comes out of the box as a top-tier running back. Offensively, it feels like they should be able to challenge some teams at least a little bit. But I stare at that schedule and I'm like, is it week 12 against Washington? Like, is that where, you know, maybe Washington their has
win,
to put it back?
Their win total is 4.5, which is tied for the lowest with the Dolphins. Week 12, they're a 4.5-point dog against Washington.
Is that their closest spread up until week 12?
Week 15, yes, that is their closest.
That's what I figured.
Week 15, they are a 1.5-point dog against the Jets. And week 17, they are a 1.5-point dog against Fitz's Raiders. But Just to put it in kind of perspective, at the Giants, they are currently a touchdown underdog. So there's a lot of separation in odds makers' eyes between the Cardinals and everyone else, I would say, outside the Dolphins.
Yeah, that's
they're not playing the Dolphins.
It's a road game, cross-country games, has a noon, you know, or 1 o'clock start. So you're really playing on body clock time. You're a couple hours ahead of where you would normally play. or I'm sorry, a couple hours behind where you would normally play.
There'll be a couple tickets available for also, that one down the road.
I just think it would. See, Rob, I think you in these situations a lot because my fandom we've never held back on. And there's been times that I've said, just suck. And C-Rob always says something that resonates with me. I don't think you realize how much it hurts an entire locker room when your season goes off the rails like that. And I just keep thinking about it. If you're LaFleur, who was a late hire, late in the process, some might, on the outside looking in, there's this little bit of like, they settled for LaFleur. I'm not saying that's the truth. I'm just saying that now you're about to go through a brutal season where you don't have a quarterback. You're a massive underdog. The wheels could just fall off of this thing so quickly. And I feel bad for a coach that's getting his first chance to really have his identity with an organization that doesn't have an identity and they don't have a quarterback and they're going to get their asses kicked over and over and over again. And even if I believe that gets them to the first overall pick and a quarterback that can save the franchise, what's he really coming into? What is he coming in to save? Now he's coming into the most toxic environment you can possibly come into. So I think you see, Rob, and I hear you, Cardinals fans, when you say, hey, you got to find hope somewhere. When your team stinks, you find hope in the sea of suck that you're swimming in. But, man, I just think about C-Rob a lot talking about how bad it can be. Speaking of the Raiders.
Wait, real quick, ahead. Just real quick. Remember, too, this is the organization that took Josh Rosen 10th overall over Lamar Jackson, by the way, right? And then the next year they were bad enough that they're like, all right, well, screw it. There's a better quarterback there for us now. Kyler Murray, you take him, you know, first overall. Just because you're in that position to take a quarterback in a rich quarterback draft, you can A, choose the wrong one, which, oh my God, they definitely chose the wrong one in 2018, or B, end up with your choice of anybody, and it ends up being Kyler Murray, who obviously doesn't work out and I think set the franchise back.
I mean, again, the Titans had Cam Ward first overall, and the Titans have not been saved, and we'll see what happens with the Raiders, who just took Fernando Mendoza first overall. We'll see. When these teams are that bad, it's not as simple as one person to save them. Speaking of Fernando, Marshawn Lynch had a little bit to say about Fernando in that quarterback room. Check this out.
How long do you think before Fernando takes over?
Ooh. To be honest with you, him being able to see who they got over there.
Kirk Cousins.
Kirk. Yeah, I mean, I don't believe Kurt is a bad guy to be able to sit behind and learn. I believe, like, you know, with these young quarterbacks, and a lot of them is, you know what I mean, get thrown into the fire where they're not able to, you know what I mean, develop. And then they start getting written off. So being able to sit behind Kurt, you know what I mean, to get the game, I think that might do him, you know what I mean, some justice. But, I mean, in this type of league and in this game, there's no telling.
All right. So with that being said, and, you know, with the love that everybody has for Fernando right now, because it's fun to have something to root for, gentlemen. You know that. You know I'm rooting for him. I'm going to go buy myself a jersey. Raiders offensive coordinator Andrew Janoco said about Fernando, he's a sponge that wants to know everything. He's asking questions that you might not have thought about in a couple of years. It also makes you evaluate everything. I know we've had some success doing it one way, but we could do it another way and be even better. And that, I need to chime in. But before we do that, it's going to bring us to one more thing. I heard the quotes about Fernando Mendoza, and you guys know I want to be excited, but here's the thing. You can't believe anything anybody says right now. None of this means anything. Like, this is my constant thing that I always tell people. If you want to go see a psychic, I support it. Go see a psychic. But before you go, take your most dumpster fire friend, the one person you know is never going to get their life right, and ask them to go in first. And if they come out after visiting the psychic in tears saying, my life is never going to get on track, I'm going to die broken alone under a bridge, that's a psychic you go see all the time because that's an honest psychic. NFL coaches are about as honest as Miss Cleo. So until I see a coach come out and say, boy, did we blow it. This kid sucks. Or, yeah, we didn't really want him, but we kind of got stuck where we are. Or, yeah, you know, we need a quarterback. He was the best quarterback. What are you going to do? You never hear that from coaches. So having an offensive coordinator come in and say, oh, he's like a sponge. He asked questions we hadn't even thought of. Well, that implies that he's asking something that offensive coordinators haven't even thought about. That implies that Kirk Cousins looked at the offense and didn't even have the brilliance to see some of the why sort of questions. Let's all relax, all right? What they're doing here is they're building up a kid that asks a lot of questions to make sure he hears in the press that they love that he's a sponge and wants to ask a lot of questions. What does it mean? Absolutely nothing, because if he sucked, they wouldn't tell us. And if he's great, that's all they're going to tell us until we actually see it on the field, which, by the way, might not even happen until week 12, 13, 14, or 15. All of this is just a bunch of hope for a fan base that needs hope. I love the drug that hope prevents, but gentlemen, none of this conversation means anything. That's my one more thing. Ben, what do you got for us?
Well, first, like I said, that was a very specific example on that psychic. So yeah, we'll have to evaluate that later. Yeah. I'll leave that over here.
And Ben, if you can't find the dumpster fire friend to take to Miss Cleo, it means you're the dumpster fire friend.
That's why do you think I'm asking that's Frank right. to go to Frank and I are going to go see a psychic next time we're in Frank Vegas. Schwab. I kid, Frank. I love you, Frank.
Oh, man. Before it goes too far off the rails, Circa Sports, people love NFL Survivor contests. This week, they always kind of are upping the ante in terms of the guarantee. This year, they have guaranteed $20 million for the pool. Basically, each entry is $1,000. You pick one NFL team. The way Circa does it, Thanksgiving's its own week, Christmas's own week. So there's one more. So there's actually 20 different selections you have to get correct. Last year, there were five winners. They split the pot of $18.7 million. Each won a little over $3.7 million. That will be even bigger pot this season. And they do also have the high roller contest that I know that C-Rob will be entering. $100,000 per entry for Survivor.
Can I expense that?
Yes. Ben says yes.
Probably.
Ben says yes.
Yeah.
It's research. It's a tax write-off.
Hey, I just want Ben to clue us in again before the season starts on who all of a sudden pops up and starts putting money on one specific team. I knew when that guy put all that money on Seattle, something was going on. I should have thought to myself, like, listen, follow this guy's money last summer. My one more thing. Look, the Cleveland Browns, I'm telling you, every time head coach Todd Monken opens his mouth, he seems to say something good about Deshaun Watson. And for most of the expanse of this offseason, I thought to myself, it's not happening. Like, what is, you know, this is just the typical coach trying to, you know, lighten the locker room and keep a messy quarterback room a little bit sorted out, with obviously Shedeur Sanders and Deshaun Watson are going to be pushing for that starting job. I think it's going to end up being between one of those two guys. And Monken said he would really like to have it sorted out, you know, by the end of spring. I think as you get through full squad mini camps, if he had his druthers, he'd know who his starting quarterback is by the time they hit the break before getting to training camp. But he also said, look, we'll take it all the way up to, you know, the week before we kick off the season if we have to. I just keep hearing him say good things about Deshaun Watson. And every time he talks about Shedeur Sanders, it's about the progress he's made, the growth he's seen. He talks more like a coach that wants to start Deshaun Watson right now. And although I didn't believe it before, the more I listen to him speak about what Watson's done in the past, what he has looked like on the field now, throwing the football, the way he's approached it, and even the schematic fit that Deshaun Watson has for a Todd Monken. I'm telling you, I think there's a growing chance that Watson ends up being that starting quarterback when the Browns hit the field in week one.
Oh, there are very few true quarterback battles happening this offseason. So that one is going to be, it was already must watch because of the names involved, but the fact that there aren't many of them is going to make it even bigger in the attention
span. I'm sure social media will be completely level-headed about this entire thing, and we won't see all kinds of just absolutely jaw-dropping stuff.
Yeah. People are going to react to this with a level of calm that we're used to when names like Deshaun and Shedeur are involved. That's the fact. Thanks to everybody behind the scenes, Madison Stone and everybody else that puts the show together. C-Rob, Ben, thanks for letting me sit in Andrew's seat for a night. It's always fun to come back and hang out with everybody. Be sure to check us out. We'll be back again next Wednesday. Thanks for hanging out with us, Inside Coverage. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe if you're listening to us on the pod, and hang out with us soon.